Welcome everyone to this week's edition of the Bombercast. I am your regular co-host, The Grizz, and with me is the man who was once proclaimed by a fellow poster as having the visionary of a god, a man who led brilliantly once apparently, the Bonza 34. I was told I had to introduce you like that, Bonza. Is that good enough?
Yeah, I didn't actually expect you to do it. To be honest, you caught me a little bit by surprise, but I'll take the shout out. It was in relation to, I did say about halfway through the second quarter, I think Yoda said, "Oh, we're going to start 1-6," and I jokingly said, "That's pretty hard when we're already 2-1." And then from that point on, we dominated. So, do I take credit? I think I do.
I think you just spoke it into existence. I think we should just get you to declare all results halfway through the second quarter. And Bont, it was a weird game on Saturday. We'll jump straight into it because there's plenty to talk about. I think from the game, I think. It was such a bizarre game to watch because I think for the best part of the first three quarters, St Kilda really dominated the game. And it was basically a 5 to 6 minute spurt in each quarter. It happened at the end of the first, end of the second, probably halfway through the third, where we stacked on a few goals in a row and just kept in enough touch to put St Kilda under pressure. They sprayed some shots that they really should have kicked to sort of, that could have put us at arm's length. And we ended up stealing the chockies in a much better second half to the first. What was your takeaway, your main takeaway from the game?
Yeah, you're right. It is a tough one. Oh, look, I think you probably, by saying they dominated for three quarters, I think you're probably underselling us a little bit. I think I felt in that third quarter when we came out to play, I mean, we kicked the first goal of the third, then we kicked the point, then they responded, then we kicked the goal. Yeah, I always thought like we were coming. I just didn't feel like we could quite touch them. So and then obviously the stringer thing happened, which clearly should have been a goal, and you know, we can talk about that later if you want, but I'm trying to be a positive man, so I won't touch it too much at the moment. So you know, stuff like that, I genuinely thought we were on top for large parts of that second half and probably the back half of that second quarter. I thought at times we were really, really starting to come into our own. The one thing we have to start with, and we have to start with it because we've talked about him before, and I've said repeatedly that it's not good enough that he just runs and runs and runs. He needs to get the ball. Did Harry Jones get the ball on the weekend or what? He was phenomenal, I thought.
Yeah, it was probably, in my head, that game against Hawthorn down in Tassie was probably his best game. He was marking everything, kicked three goals. But what really impressed me this week about Harry was, we talked about it a few weeks ago, and I said that you know, the young player thing didn't work when you're year five, and he had to start getting his hand on footy and showing some production, and we saw that. Like I said, 10 marks, two goals. He got his hands to a couple more, which you just thought dead to rights he should have marked. But, you know, you can never really tell in that position, but I thought he was very strong. He even had a mark he didn't even know he took. He hit that one where he went for the spoil, knocked it out of his hand and then took it and didn't realize he took the mark. Probably could have kicked three if he had known, but that sort of, that's what we needed with Peter Wright going down. We couldn't rely on the medium of Langford and Stringer to be those focal points. They're at their best when they're working around the bigger guys. And, you know, Sammy Draper is a natural forward. So we needed someone like Harry Jones to step up, and he did a really good job. So I'm wrapped now. It's about, okay, he should get a favourable matchup next week against the Power, that their defenders don't play sort of really tight defence, more of a zoning defence. Let's see him stack, you know, 2 weeks in a row now.
Yeah, and I think what you said there about they play that zone, really, that's what stood out to me for Harry on the weekend, was he wasn't trying to take contested marks of the block. He got separation, which meant he was able to run and jump at the ball. And yeah, the big marks that he took where he kicked his goals, he was in the front of the pack, sort of by himself, floating across the front and taking the mark before he even got to the pack. So he was just taking it at its highest point. And I think that's his strength. I think we all know that if he gets on his bike and he gets some separation and he's able to just run and leap unaided at the ball without somebody taking his body, he's a much better prospect. So, yeah, I was quite happy. But as you're right, he does need to do it again. But we can only go on what his performance was on the weekends for this week. So for this week, I think he definitely gets a big rap from me.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Port game coming up, but they do play a zone off defense, so honoring the leading target and piercing that zone through sort of more precise kicking will be required. If we go long down the line against this team, we'll get gobbled up. But we won't talk about next week. I I thought the forwards generally, Peter, like, I don't know if there's a more dangerous forward in the competition than contract year Jake Stringer. Like it's sort of incredible what this guy does when there's a contract up to grabs. But hey, I'll take 10 goals in 3 weeks from him. Kyle Langford kicked another three, probably could have had another couple. There was one set shot which was bizarrely sort of missed by him. I thought the forwards had a good day, the taller forwards. We'll get to the smaller players in the forward line later, but I thought the mix of, Stringer, Langford, Jones, and the resting Ruckman seemed to work really well.
The thing about Jakey Stringer is, as soon as he took that mark in that last quarter,
Yep.
he did the casual half. Oh, is there anyone? No, there's no one open. I'll just stroll back. And as soon as it left his boot, he had his hand up in the air. He knew. I said to a couple of blokes during the week that, everything people say about Jake Stringer is probably true. He's never really super fit. He doesn't chase that well. He does go missing. All this sort of stuff does happen. But Jesus Christ, if you're 2 points down and you've got a player who's got the ball 55 meters out on a 45-degree angle on the wrong side for a right footer, do you want the ball in anyone else's hands? Because he just seems to be the big moments. He just turns up. Even if you go back to even to the 2016 grand final, 2016 when he was playing for the Dogs and he was quiet all that year and there was talk about it. Come the grand final, that last quarter, he had some big moments in that grand final. I think he hit Liam Picken top of the goal square. Stuff like that. The big moments, he just finds a way. So yeah, really happy with him. Langford, consistent as always, has carried on brilliantly from last year. So I think our four lines has overall worked really well. They didn't get in each other's way. They kept separation. And yeah, that'll be the big thing moving forward is if they can just keep the separation and not get in each other's way, then we're probably in for a good time with those three up forward.
Yeah, I think Jones pushing up the ground really helps that. He creates that space because it's not really all three of them in the forward line at the same time. There's always one always pushing up to the wing to provide an option or go through the midfield. I was literally in the middle of about to post during the game. He's the sort of bloke to kick this goal because we had kicked about three behinds in a row. No one had the composure. So like, he's the sort of guy that will kick this. And then as I was typing, he kicked us. I said, oh, well, I'll look like it. Yeah, Sandra Sully with the late news now. I'm not going to post it. But I thought the big guys in general had a good day. The rucks really worked Rowan Marshall over. I don't know if anyone else noticed during the game, but Rowan Marshall didn't ruck for the last 5 to 6 minutes and he was absolutely shot to bits. And so we had Sammy Draper against Mitch Owens in the ruck for the last 5 minutes, and Mitch was doing all sorts of grabbing and holding, just trying to control Draper, particularly in the forward line. And you could just tell that over the course of the day, the ruckman had really worked Rowan Marshall over with Draper and Goldstein. And I thought the big guys in defence, Ben Mackay, I'm surprised at how well he started the season. I knew he'd be a solid player, but I think his intercept marking, his contested marking has been much better than advertised coming from North for mine. I thought he was a decent player without being great. And I thought Laverty had a dirty day at times on Membry, but although Membry did go, he could have kicked a couple. But I thought Cox had a really strong day as well on a rotating number of forwards. But he just seems like you can just see he seems more content and comfortable in that back six as a genuine defender as opposed to some rotating wingman or something along those lines.
Yeah, and I think the back six had a really good day as well as a total. So, Ben Mackay is obviously a big part of that. It's good, as I think a few people have said, it's good to finally have a genuine key position defender, a genuine AFL quality key position defender. Now, Zerk Thatcher last year came on, and I thought he was an AFL quality player, but I think Ben Mackay is obviously an upgrade on Zerk. You and I said that last year. We lost Zerk, but we've got Mackay, so that's probably an upgrade in the list. And I think Ben's shown that in his first three games for the club. And I think you're right, Cox just looks better behind the ball. I mean, you and I have been screaming for Cox to be settled somewhere, whether it be centre half or centre half back, doesn't really matter, for a long time. Forget the wing, forget this hybrid unicorn bullshit. He's a big bloke, play him in a big bloke position, and his mobility is just a bonus in that sort of regard because it means he'll be able to push off on the other big blokes that he plays on. And that's exactly what's been happening. So, yeah, I was really pleased with how they played. And I thought Andy McGrath down there was really good as well. I thought he was directing traffic quite well. And the other one in the back six I will touch on has been the man who's much maligned at the club, but I think played well on the weekend. And that was Dyson Heppel. So we'll give him a shout out. I did say in the thread, that the game he played is probably what we need from the player in his role. And, unfortunately, Dice doesn't do it every week, but he did it this week. So, again, it's the same as what I said with Harry Jones. You can sort of only comment on what they did during the week, and so you've got to give him the chocolates and hope that he can find a way to do it again against Port.
Yeah, I feel like people look at Dyson and expect something other than what a 32-year-old with the amount of mileage he has on his body can do. So, there's no surprise that the first half looked bad, second half looked better. Why? Because the zone and the pressure up the field was better. Players like Dyson Heppel at his age and his, declining physicality, and I say declining physicality in terms of his ability to cover ground, he'll throw his body on the line if he has to, but in terms of his ability to cover ground, when the ball's moving at a rate of knots and we're not defending in transition, guys like him get shown up, and they get shown up really bad, and it looks horrific when the ball gets down to the last line and Dyson's getting rings run around him. But if it gets to him in that situation, something's going wrong up the field. You can't expect him to lock someone down. Whereas when we had pressure on the ball up in the up the ground, you saw all of our defenders, including Dice, just looked way better because they had more time to react. They could set up their zone and they weren't as isolated one-on-one, which is where Dyson's going to look really shabby at this point, just because that's where his body's at. And so I'm happy for Dice that he played okay. I think he's okay generally, but he's because of where he plays when he has a bad moment, it looks horrific. And there's no takeaway from that. He's not the sort of guy you can sort of set, forget, or lock on a forward anymore. He is, player 25 through 30 on our list, not best 22 necessarily all the time. And that's just a reality. And he might get picked a bit more because of his leadership, but with Ridley out, with Reid out, with a relatively inexperienced team around him, generally, when you think of the many young guys on our team, that's the sort of game we don't need, all Australian Dice. We just need, not going to cost us 3 goals going the other way, Dice, which we had at different points this year.
Yeah, the other bloke I do want to quickly mention in terms of positives was the return of Darcy Parrish. Now, I said it in the autopsy thread, and I'll say it again. He had 23 touches, but he led the team for tackles, and you could see that defensively he was trying his best to be the best version of Darcy Parrish, the defensive player. And I don't care if he only gets 25, 26 touches a week. If he's laying, the 7 or 8 tackles a week, that's fine. We don't need him to go out and get 40 touches, especially with the way that we've spread now. So, you got Archie Perkins still at his 20 touches on the weekend. Zach obviously went big like Zach does. Andy McGrath had 30 on the half back. Redmond 25 through the middle. Dersmer had 23. Caldwell. So we don't need Zach and Darcy to go out and get 40 touches each anymore, because we've got other players that are able to go and get the ball, which was big part of the problem last year, was that Darcy would get the ball and give it to Zach, or Zach would get the ball and give it to Darcy. It was sort of just trading amongst each other while we were waiting for Setterfield and Caldwell and everyone to gel. And I think those guys have started to gel. So, yeah, really happy with the way Darcy fired back on the weekend against St Kilda.
Yeah, I don't. Are we allowed to say anything nice about Darcy Parrish on Big Footy? I thought, you're only meant to smash him. But if we're saying nice things about Darcy, I still think he had statistically a pretty good game. But like you said, it was
Yeah,
like
26 touches. Sorry, I said 23. He's had three added since I looked.
And he had, I think he had 5 clearances. Like you said, 8 tackles. Like that's the sweet spot, isn't it? Like less is more sometimes. Because the quality of his disposals are better because he's not getting 36 by, the quick 1-2s out of the center, which really could have just been a one and someone else kicks it, for example. But his defensive intent is so much clearer, and I think he looks bigger. I don't know if it's just me, but he looks like he's muscled up, and so he's not. Although he's a shorter mid, he's not getting overpowered at the stoppage. And there was a lot of debate at the end of last year about our midfield mix and whether we needed to lose one of the smaller guys to bring in a bigger body mid. And I was screaming that we just needed guys like Will Setterfield and Archie Perkins to get regular midfield minutes in order to balance out the guys like Merritt and Heppel. And you see, it's not just Perkins who's getting a lot more midfield time, had a quieter game, but still solid on the weekend. Will Setterfield didn't play, but he's been pretty solid the first 2 weeks. But Sammy Durham, these guys, we're just rolling a few more guys through there and we're getting much better looks through our midfield. I just want to say 2 things on midfield before we move on to, I think we want to talk about Nick Martin in a second. The first thing is the continued excellence of Zach Merritt. I feel like he's just so consistently good that we forget how good that is. So he had six tackles. He had six center clearances, Bontz. The next best was two on the ground. So, like, this guy is winning. That's pure. That's the purest midfield clearance you can get is center clearance. You get more scores from that than you do from your stoppage clearances. He's just outstanding. I heard that David King, who hasn't got a lot of nice things to say about Essendon, called him probably the best captain in the competition at the moment, considering what he's, you know, the he hasn't got as many superstars around him as, say, you know, a Max Gawn or something to help him. He really is leading by example. He's just consistently excellent. 14 contested possessions. So for someone with his skill, half of his disposals are contested, which is excellent. But the other thing I just want to talk about, and these set that to have mentioned this morning on SEN, I think it's a really interesting look at how we're playing. So we're plus 26 for total clearances over the year over our opposition. So that's a differential stat. So over the course of the year, if you're listening, we have 26 more disposals than our opponent, total clearances, and plus 16 in centre bounce clearances. Both of those are number one in the competition. So head-to-head, we are winning 26 more clearances and 16 more centre bounce clearances than our opposition, which is number one in the comp. We're the number one team in the competition from scoring in forward half stoppages. We were 18th last year. We're scoring four goals a game from stoppages in our forward half. We were scoring 10 last year. So we went from last year to first this year. Our clearance game has gone from leaps and bounds. And I've just done a lot of talking, Bonson. You can talk about whatever you want. But it seems that mix that we've got going through of different types of players is really working to our advantage.
It does. I do just want to point out, Darcy did have a 58% disposal efficiency, so he still butchered the ball a little bit, just to counter that. You talk about the midfield mix, and it's a really good point, because the biggest thing last year I found was the question was, how do you fit Zerett, Darcy and Scheel into the same side? And the reality is we haven't had to do that this year because Scheel's not playing. So, you know, maybe we did miss a trick by not moving Scheel on last year. I'm not sure about that at the moment, but we'll wait and see how he comes back, if he comes back, because he just seems to be the forgotten man at the moment. But, yeah, you're right. We have improved all around the ground for our midfield. It does come by the fact that these blokes like Perkins and Caldwell and Setterfield and even Hobbsy have come on. I was a big Sammy Darren fan at the start of the year. I've probably gone cold in him just a little bit the last couple of weeks. I get that he obviously on the weekend got that knock, so that was pretty unlucky. But he did still have, you know, 11 touches from a fair amount of game time. Still, I think he was on the ground for about, I don't know, 60% of the game. Maybe it was a bit less. I'm not sure. Actually, no, I've just looked. Sorry, he had 50%, like 46%. So there you go. That's probably why he had 11 touches. So, you know, yeah, it's good to see these guys going through. We will move to Nick Martin. Now, I had some friends at the game on the weekend, and I actually, to be honest, had no idea that he had 29 touches. I was blown away because I was sitting at home, blown away, he had 29 touches at halftime. And I actually messaged him and said, how many touches do you reckon Martin's had? And the answers I sort of got back were somewhere between 9 to 12. Nobody could believe he had 29 touches. It was one of the more bizarre 29 touch halves I think you'll see. And I don't know if it just means that I wasn't paying enough attention or what the go was, because you know, the first quarter there he had 12 disposals, but he only managed, and I'm just trying to find, I'm scrolling all the way down here.
He ended up with 44 for the game.
So he had 12 in the first half, in the first quarter, had no meters gained. So didn't move the ball at all. Then in the second quarter, he had 17 touches, but he had 250 meters gained. And then again, back in the third quarter, I don't know what happened with Mardo. He struggled to me to get his hands in the pill at times, but he wasn't. I don't know what happened. It just happened without me even noticing him on the ground. And there was a lot of talk afterwards about how well he played and all this sort of stuff. And I guess, you know, 44 touches and 781 meters gained, you kind of have to appreciate it, don't you? You had five score involvements, you had seven clearances. You kind of have to take it as word, but yeah, strange game for me, for him.
Yeah, I'm probably more on the negative side. So I should preface this. When I say negative, I don't necessarily mean he had a bad game, but that was one of the least convincing 44 disposal efforts I've seen. Like, I remember there was one game Zach had 40 something, and it was probably the most influential 40 disposals I've ever seen, right? In comparison, I would argue Zach's 30 was way more influential than Nick Martin's 44. Now, Nick still had a role to play. Without Ridley, he was sort of that general distributor out of the back line. My problem with his role, and it is a problem with his role, not him, because I think he's playing his role well. So I think it's really important to point that out. I think he's doing what the coaches are asking him to do, and he's doing it really well. My problem is what they're asking him to do. I want Nick Martin as far up the field as possible, because someone of his ball use and his creativity is sort of wasted 30 meters out from our defensive goal line. Like, you want that guy either kicking off half back to springboard our attack through the middle of the ground or towards half forward, or in the forward half kicking or creating goals. Where we've got him at the moment is sort of this last line of the defense distributor. So if he gets a ball 30 meters out, he's kicking it to the half back line, but we're still log jammed. And comparatively, if the ball gets turned over, he's basically our last line of the defense. And I love Nick, but he's not that type of defender. So what are we doing with his role? I don't quite, like, I know it's meant to be nominally the Nick Daicos thing, but again, we've talked about this before. Nick Daicos starts at halfback and then just never go, like, he'll start a set play at halfback, a center bounce, and then he'll wander off and then never go back into defensive 50 again. Like, he basically starts at halfback, so he's guaranteed not to have a tag through the midfield. Whereas I think we're genuinely playing Nick Martin as like a back pocket halfback. I just don't think it's the best use of his skill set, which is incredible. And I don't know. Look, he played well. He's 44 disposals. He ended up with almost 800 meters gain. So you can't say we weren't getting any benefit out of it. But on the same breath, I'm just trying to figure out, are we using him best?
Well, you said he's not the kind of defender you can leave the last line. I would argue he's not a defender at all. I said in the game thread very early in the match, you know, very early in the piece, I said, there he is again. And he just literally was jogging behind St. Kilda players, just jogging along behind, because he's not a defender. And, you know, the reality is not everybody is going to be your defensive-minded players. So Darcy Parrish, that was the knock on him, was that, you know, he wasn't able to delay the tackles. I think my biggest problem with Darcy was he'd shown that he could do it. He just didn't do it often enough. To me, Mardo's never shown it. He's just never, I say it again and again. I watched him live last year, time and time again, just jogging behind, and it was fine because, as you said, he played up forward. We were sort of able to cover him a bit easier. But yeah, we've just got this weird thing at the moment where we're playing him as a half back, flank back pocket, and he's just not. So I don't get the role. I'm never going to get the role. I've been very vocal here before that, you know, we had Massimo D'Ambrosio, who could have done this role. We got rid of him because he wasn't defensive, and then we moved him in. Look, and the thing is, you can argue about whether or not he's continued on his form that he showed against us in round one. The reality is he's an AFL quality player who could have done this role, and we could have had someone doing this role, and we could have still had Mardo up forward. So I think we could have had both best of both worlds. Instead, we've got half of one of the best worlds. So
with Mass, we offer there's this thing, and I'm not picking nits here, but we did offer Mass a contract. He took a 2-year deal at Hawthorn.
But just on that, no. I'm sorry, we offered him a deal. If we wanted him to stay, we could have got him to stay. This whole, but we threw him a contract. So what? We threw him a 1-year deal. If we wanted him to stay, we could have offered him 2 years. We could have said to him, hey, we got 1 year and 1 year with a trigger. We could have found a way. The reality is we didn't want to keep him. It's that simple. AFL clubs, unless a player is going home or a player has decided they want to go play finals somewhere else, or they're getting blown out of the water with the big money offer, which Hawthorn didn't offer him big cash. It wasn't that. It was actually similar. It was only the extra year. AFL clubs don't lose players they want to keep. We just don't want to keep Mass. And that's fine if we didn't want to keep him. But as I said, the whole role thing just bizarre to me now. But Mass is obviously a Hawthorn player. So we won't. And you and I have talked about him. So let's not go back into the Mass debate.
Yeah,
I was
okay.
Just
so
throwing it out.
Yeah. I just think we're not even with Nick in his role. If he's going to play in defense, I want him playing as a genuine halfback flanker where he's using the ball coming off halfback through the midfield. We've got him sort of 30 meters deeper than that. He's kicking out his last line of defense. So even if he nails his kick, we're getting it 50, 60 out from goal on the half back line, and someone else has to make that critical kick. I want Nick taking that kick through the middle of the ground or going forward to set up our play. I don't want him on the last line of defense. We're robbing Peter to keep Paul from going bankrupt. We're not even robbing Peter to pay Paul. Like, I'd rather, if that's a role, you know, someone else can play that role deep in defense. I'd rather Nick further up the ground. But in saying that, 44 disposals, 8 marks, you know, he still has 3 clearances. So clearly he's working around the ball, 800 meters gained, a good game, just probably not the role I would see him in, but that's why the coaches get paid a bazillion dollars more than I do. One just last negative we might close on before we have any final thoughts is, and I don't even think Mardo was negative, but just, you know, one negative we want to talk about is the small forwards. I said this multiple times in the game thread. We just have no speed once the ball hits the deck. And, you know, Jai Menzies is an honest trier, but, you know, he's not especially quick and his pressure game isn't great. He tries hard, which is fine, but I just think we're missing some. Jade Gresham didn't give us much on the weekend as well. He's not exempt from that. Yeah, Nick Hind gave us a bit when he came on the field, but again, there's that speed. I do wonder if even in a winning team, we look at someone like a Jaden or an Alan Davey or someone else with just a bit more pace in the forward half to put some pressure on and to give us a bit of danger once the ball hits the deck. Because it felt like any time the ball hit the deck, St Kilda sort of just walked it back out.
Yeah, I agree with. Oh, look, I think we should be playing Owen Davey. I get that he, you know, they want to play him in the BFL and all that. Play him in the AFL. I mean, he's not tearing the BFL apart. So if we're waiting for him to tear the BFL apart, we'll be waiting. Well, especially our BFL side, because it's got to be hard work being a small forward in the Eastern BFL side at the moment, because it's not a great team.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's ever going to tear apart the VFL. So I think if you're going to develop him, throw him in the AFL, and at least it gives us some speed, as you said. Somebody said during the week that, but Jai was our second goal kicker last year, or third goal kicker, or whatever it was.
It was 20 goals, was it?
Yeah.
21
goals. Yeah. And the reality was, I think Stringer and Peter Wright and a few others played less games, but were averaging a lot more goals per game than him. So it's a bit of a disingenuous comment to say, oh, but he was number two for us last year. So, yeah, I think we're pretty slow when the ball hits the ground. I think you're right. I think Gresham probably just adds a little bit more than Menzies at the moment. He was quiet on the weekend, but, you know, it was good to see. To be honest, it was good to see him pump the fist after the siren. You could see it meant a lot to him to beat the Saints. So that was a nice little touch. But, yeah, no, I agree. I think at the moment we've got to find speed down there somewhere, and it just hasn't happened with Jai. And then the other thing is he gets to good spots but doesn't make the most of it. So he's a little bit like Harry Jones, I think, in that he's running into the right spots, but he's not getting his hands on the pill. Like a couple of times there, he probably should have kicked, you know, two or three, maybe even four goals on the weekend, but he just fumbles at the wrong moment or he does the wrong thing. So, yeah, I agree. But let's move forward, Grizz. Let's look towards this week's game. And just before we quickly touch on it, I do want to quickly ask you, gather round, what are your thoughts? Do you like gather round? Do you like all the games in one city? Now, we obviously know why we did it. It was because the NRL has magic round. And look, to be honest, it's a little bit silly that we copied the NRL, because the NRL did it because they don't get crowds to their games. And then all of a sudden they did every game in a two stadiums or whatever it was, they got crowds for the games and they went, oh my God, this is a great idea. The AFL went, oh, we need to replicate. The reality is we get crowds anyway, so we didn't actually need to do it. But what do you think? Do you like Gather Round as a concept?
I like how the NRL claimed that they, you know, we stole Gather Round, and they completely neglect to tell everyone that they actually stole Gather Round off the Super League in England. But that's okay. That's fine. I don't mind the idea of it. As a once-off, there's talk about multiple gather-rounds, whatever. I don't mind it as a once-off. I'd like to see it move around a bit more than Adelaide, but you run into an infrastructure problem of what's one place that can hold it all? Queensland already has gather-round for the NRL. It's really only one AFL stadium in Perth. Like Tasmania maybe with Hobart and Launceston, but good luck trying to get that many people staying in Tasmania at one time. It's true of a school holiday. So I don't mind it. as a once-off thing, sort of novelty item. But I think they've got to keep it a bit fresh. I think it is a bit of a novelty thing at this point, and hopefully, yeah, it just needs a. It's one of those things that just needs a few years of growing it. Sorry, to make it more of a festive sort of routine thing that we look forward to every year. But
you're right about the infrastructure. So I actually think it needs to stay in Adelaide purely because, as you said, Perth's got Perth Stadium. They do have a stadium down south that they play some preseason games at. Maybe they could throw a game at the Wacker again just for shits and gigs. Queensland, Gold Coast, Brisbane. We see at the moment the Olympics in Brisbane. Who the hell knows? There's no other stadium, so they can't do it. I mean, they've got Cairns, but Cairns to Brisbane's not exactly a quick trip, so it sort of defeats the purpose. Sydney's the same. The SCG, Stadium Australia, Showgrounds. But Stadium Australia is not really designed anymore for it, so again, two grounds. Don't really want it in Melbourne. Doesn't make sense to throw it in Victoria since we sort of get it. And then you're right about Tassie. Too far away. You can't really expect everyone to get down there. I mean, they've got Kingston Oval as well down there in North Hobart, so they've got the grounds, but the logistics are just too hard. So I think moving forward, it stays in Adelaide.
Yeah. So just got a couple of minutes of the game. I think this will be one in the midfield. Port are a really good clearance team as well, but I think they're just behind us in total clearances and in centre clearances. So, and they're terrible, and they're not very good at defending clearance. So when they concede heavy in terms of scoring. So I tend to think that whoever gets on top in the midfield here, and like I said, it has been our strength statistically, whoever gets on top, I think, in centre clearances and particularly centre clearances, probably goes, you know, a fair way to winning this game.
You're right. They are a good clearance team. I think they're a different clearance team to us, though. Like, when I think of Rosie and Butters, I don't think about, like, you know, we've got our blokes that like Caldwell and Setterfield and Darcy, where we're not explosive speed. I think they're a little bit quicker. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know if that's right. I don't know. That's just my gut feel, because the days of Ollie Wines and Travis Boak and the big bodies of, I mean, they've still got Willem Drew, but to me,
they are
a quicker team.
They're an aggressive clearance team. They're extremely aggressive with how they set up. But like I said, if they lose the clearance because they're so aggressive, you can really punish them on the if you get the clearance and if you get it forward to centre. So that's a payoff that they have. But their midfield is so good that they win a lot of them anyway. And then there's obviously, you know, our key defenders sort of seem to line up well on theirs. I think McKay on Dixon and Cox on Marshalls are probably a pretty good mix in terms of matchups. It'll be interesting to see how we match up defensively in terms of our forwards on their defenders. They've got quite a lot of zone off sort of guys. So Alir and Dirk Thatcher and Radaglia aren't great one-on-one, but they are good at intercepting. So we're going to have to really honour the leads, which the good thing about Jones and Langford is that's what they tend to do pretty well.
Yeah, you're right. And so I think the matchups, I think we match up well. And I'm interested to see how Zerk goes. The Zerk factor, as I'm calling it. Essendon players do have a habit of turning up against us a little bit. But whether or not that happens with Zerk, who knows? I mean, he's a key position defender, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, the biggest problem I think we're going to have, it sort of goes to the theme of the aggressiveness, is the fact that Port, when they move the ball quickly, they are lightning. They are lightning. And while I think our defensive running on Saturday was very, very good compared to what it had been previously, if we don't turn up from the first bounce, they will absolutely burn us, and we may find ourselves six goals down at quarter time and wondering what the hell are we doing here. Because to me, they just Butters, Rosie, even Ryan Burton with his boot, Dan Houston, these guys, they just move the ball quick. And there is that little bit of me that goes, are we a serious midfield defensive unit yet? And I think it's going to be a great test.
Yeah, look, it gets away from you really quick at Adelaide Oval. If you go four or five goals behind Port Adelaide at home in Adelaide, it's almost impossible to come back. That crowd gets involved. It's a tough slog. So we can't have the start we had against...
Never tear us apart, Chris. Never tear us apart.
Except if you're Melbourne last week. But generally speaking, yes.
No, you're right. You're 100% right.
But I suppose now we'll go to the tips. Ironically, Port Adelaide, top of the, I think, had a home qualifying final last year, but I think both the games that we played against them were less than a goal, both in Adelaide and at home. Obviously, Dan Houston after the siren down at the MCG. I reckon this will be tight. I haven't tipped us to win except for the Hawthorn game this year. So I'm going to keep that run going. I'm going to say Port Adelaide by 10 points, but I think this might be quicker than people, closer than people expect.
Yeah, you're right. We do seem to match up. It's one of those. It's another one of those Sydney type things. We seem to match up well. So yeah, 5 points we lost to them over there last year, and then in the return game we lost by four. So, and then obviously they played. They went ahead and played. They didn't get the home final. Sorry, they played the qualifying final at Brisbane. Lost that. Turned up. Got beat by GWS in the prelim and the semi. Sorry, their ground. So they were top four last year. Probably expect to be there again. I will tip us to win by 25 because I did it last week and it seemed to work well.
All right. Well, with that, thanks for joining me, Bonds. That's this week's podcast, Done and Dusted. Please remember to like and subscribe and tell your friends. Go Bombers.